Happy New Year! Welcome to Kidman Talk, episode 151. This is your host, Pastor Carl Bastian, coming to you from Kidology.org. Today is a very special episode, bonus podcast, because I'm going to disappear from your screen in just a moment and share with you a message that I presented at my church on December 27th, the final Sunday of that infamous 2020 called the Epic Story of Your Life. My desire is that you not enter this new year as just like, oh my goodness, 2020 is behind me and just dragging in the new year. No, I want you to enter it with a sense of anticipation, even excitement about what God's going to do in this new year. So it's a message I hope is exciting and encouraging and just really put some wind in your sails as we head into the new year. So I hope it will do that for you. But before we do that, quick, I got a couple of New Year's resolutions that I want to present you with. The first one is make sure you are subscribed to the Kidology newsletter. Once in a while, people unsubscribe because they're getting a whole bunch, or maybe you're only getting the Monday or the Wednesday. You really want to be getting both because we put different things in each one. So go to Kidology.org/newsletter. You can add an S on the end. We made both work. And just go through the steps and make sure you're getting all the information that you would like to get from Kidology. We don't want you to miss out on the resources and the deals and the sales and all the different things. We don't send crazy amounts of email. We limit it to those Monday and Wednesday newsletters. There's a few options there for hearing from some special deals, but we ask your permission to do that. And there's even a new one now to get updates on the IT Bible curriculum so that if you really want to know when there's releases or updates or changes or new units or whatever, you can get that information as well. Number two, make sure you are an all-access member of Kidology. I can't tell you how many times I hear from people who finally go from that free starter to the all-access and they say, oh my goodness, Carl, if I had known how much was on Kidology with the full access membership, I would have joined years ago. So many people don't realize how much is in there and how affordable it is when you think about all the resources that are in that you're going to discover. There's people who tell me they found one thing that was worth the value of the entire membership. And as always, if you're at a small church, if you're a student, if you're a missionary in another country listening to this or watching, then be sure to check out the scholarship link that's right on the join page, because we never want the membership fee to keep anyone away from the resources. So go to kidology.org/join and explore all that the All Access membership has for you. Number three, make sure you're in our Facebook group. You can go to kidology.org/Facebook. It'll direct you to our group. There's a lot of Facebook groups, and I'm in a lot of them. The Kidology one is unique in that it's not just Kidman conversations. It's kind of an inside scoop on what's new on Kidology, resources on Kidology. With over 25,000 digital resources, I'm constantly featuring things on Kidology in the group that I don't want to just put in all the other groups and, you know, feel like I'm spamming. And so I put them there and you will learn about great things. I do Facebook Lives in there all the time. And so you want to make sure you're in there. Fourth resolution and final one, drop me a line. If you enjoy the podcast, if you find this helpful and you find Kidology helpful, I'd love to hear from you. You can drop me a line at carl@kidmantalk.com. It goes directly to me. I'll enjoy reading those. In fact, just today, I got an email from Ryan Baker. He sent me some great words of encouragement. I'm not going to read it all. It'd be a little embarrassing. He was so kind. But he did tell me that he just made it through the three Kidman Ghosts podcasts and talked about how helpful they were to him. And then he said that this podcast has propelled the ministry in Middle Tennessee because of this podcast and articles, and he can't thank me enough. Ryan, thank you for your words of encouragement. It means a lot. It puts wind in my sails, helps me keep going. I've already messaged you for your address so I can mail you a copy of A Bright Idea, my last book. I want to send that to you free, leave an autograph for you. But folks, I love to hear from you. It's just a great encouragement to you. Now, before I cue up the message, a couple of points. If you're listening to this audio version on a podcast, I do play at one point a clip from a movie. And so if you hear a little bit of silence and then I do some dialogue over the clip, just be patient during those silent parts. And I'll describe what's going on in the message and be aware of that. I also created a teaser trailer for the movie because I'm talking about epic story. If you want to experience this visually, then go ahead and go to kidology.org/KidmanTalk151. And there you can just watch the video and watch the sermon, be able to see the slides and all that instead of just listening to it podcast version. But the audio works just as well. But I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. And by the way, there will not be an exit. I don't talk at the end of the message when the sermon's over, the podcast is over. Instead, just take some time to reflect on the challenge of the message. I hope that it gives you something specific and concrete, an action that you can take to make 2021 better than the year before and to propel your epic story as you journey with God into this next year. So, enough of an introduction. Here it goes, the epic story of your life.
Good morning. Would it be awesome to have a trailer for your life? I think that would be pretty epic. And I think you might underestimate just how epic it would be. Good morning. My name is Pastor Carl. I'm the kids pastor here at High Point Church. And it's always an honor and a privilege to get to teach in big church. Thank you, Pastor Caleb, for the opportunity. I have a pretty ambitious goal for this morning and for this message as we anticipate a new year. And I think we might be anticipating a new year a little more than usual. Amen? I thought I'd get a bigger amen for that. This has been a challenging year, but I've got a pretty ambitious goal for this year. I would like to forever change how you read books, watch movies, and even enjoy television series. And I'm talking about secular ones. Now, I don't want to ruin them for you, but I want you to see something in them that perhaps you never saw before. I'm convinced that you, if you learn how to look, will actually see the gospel, even in films that were written, directed, and produced by people who do not know or even hate God. How is this possible? Well, it's because they can't help it. Because God has written the truth into their very nature. And it's there even when they reject it. But I'm giving away a bit of a spoiler, so we'll circle back to that. Right now, I'd like you to get out a piece of paper or maybe just your phone and a notepad. Or I'd like you to think hard and remember what a favorite book or movie or story or even character is that you love. And jot it down because we're going to come back to it, all right? Think of a DVD series that you have actually purchased and you have in your home and in a place of honor. Maybe a book that you've reread or a movie you find yourself rewatching. A character that you've bought a poster of. And just for this morning, even one is allowed that you might think, I don't know if my pastor would approve of that. If it's a great story and you love it, we'll allow it this morning. It might be Disney. It might be Star Wars. It might be Marvel. It might be Lord of the Rings. It could be Pixar. The character might be Luke Skywalker, or in the reboot, it could be Rey. Could be Harry Potter. Or in kids' films, it could be Poe the Panda. Could be Simba or Nemo. Could be Frodo or Dorothy or Rapunzel or Hiccup, Mowgli. Even Mulan, or a heroic dog named Max. We all have our favorite stories and our favorite characters. And why is it? Why do we love stories so much? Well, it's because stories are powerful. They impact us. In fact, they change us. They become a part of us. It's a reason that Jesus taught primarily through story, and it's why the vast majority of the Bible is made up of stories, both historical stories, but also parables, fictional stories that were told to teach a spiritual truth. Well, let me suggest three reasons that we love stories so much. First of all, obviously, they entertain us. At the end of a long day, we just want to veg out and just watch something that's fun, that makes us laugh, that we just will enjoy. We want to escape our mundane life, right? And so we want to travel to a galaxy far, far away. We want to go back in time, or maybe forward in time, or perhaps even to another planet. We just want to be entertained, and that's okay. But stories also educate us. We learn things through stories. How many of us know a lot about the medical profession, having never gone to medical school? You know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. How many of you might make a pretty decent lawyer? You know what Double Jeopardy is because you've seen the movie. Or how many of you would make a pretty decent detective because of all the detective movies that you've seen? You can spot a clue from a mile away. You see what others overlook because you've gotten pretty smart watching movies. They entertain us. They educate us. They encourage us. They even inspire us. At the end of a great movie, there's a part of you that wants to be a better person. You want to be a better spouse or a better parent or a better leader because there's something in that film or in that book that you aspire to and you say, man, I want to be more like that person. That's why we love stories. I love consuming stories. I've got the big DVD collection, although now more and more they're just on our devices, right, or on hard drives. But we collect stories. I've been a collector of stories my whole life, and I like to be a storyteller. I love when kids say, tell me a story. And as part of my role as a pastor of children, I tell stories every Sunday. I love storytelling. And it's caused me to kind of think about story and to study stories. And it's made me take a harder look at my own fascination with my favorite story, Star Wars. Now, some people get a little confused. They'll say, oh, you like Star Trek? And I say, no, I like Star Wars. And they say, what's the difference? I say, well, Star Trek's make-believe. You got that. You see, I love Star Wars. I love it. It's one epic story. Every movie, every book, every video game, they all fit into this one Star Wars star, you know, this epic story. Now, I've been accused of being a Star Wars nerd, and I insist I am not a Star Wars nerd, okay? Even though I have a bit of a Star Wars museum in my basement, it's most of the basement, and it has overflowed into my office here if you ever get to see my office, but I'm not a Star Wars nerd. Even though I have traveled to a Star Wars convention dressed as a Jedi and taken my wife along, I'm not a Star Wars nerd. Even though I have constructed my own lightsaber, I am not a Star Wars nerd, okay? I would light it up for you, but there's a local ordinance in Aurora where you're not allowed to ignite your lightsaber in a public place. I'm sorry. But I'm not a Star Wars nerd, even though I waited in a line for a ridiculous amount of time so that I could be in the same room with George Lucas. I am not a Star Wars nerd. In fact, just the fact that my son's name is Luke, does not mean that I am a Star Wars nerd, so that I can say to him, Luke, I am your father. Join me and together we will overthrow mother and bring order to the household. And no, I have never said to him, Luke, it is your bedtime. It is useless to resist my son. It is your destiny. No, I'm not a Star Wars nerd, but I do love Star Wars. I love the epic story of it. And as I began to look at the other stories that people loved and that kids were drawn to, even the ones I didn't necessarily approve of, I began to analyze what really draws me to the Star Wars story, because I'm not really a science fiction fan. It was something about the story. And so I began to analyze story, and it led me to identify what I feel are the elements of all the great stories. And I just happened to land on Star Wars, partly because as a young boy, I was not allowed to go to movies. My parents were just, movies are bad. And one day my dad came home and said, everyone get in the car, we're going to go see a movie. And I said, Dad, movies are bad. He says, my buddies at seminary told me to calm down and chill out and take my kids to go see Star Wars. And so my very first cinematic experience as a 7-year-old boy was sitting in the theater and seeing that big Star Destroyer go overhead and those laser blasts. And I was hooked from the age of 7 and have been hooked ever since. And so I began to analyze them, and it's what led me to write an attempt at my own novel for kids. It's called The Order of the Ancient. And I wanted to, and the reason I did this is I saw kids getting hooked on Harry Potter and Star Wars and all these other stories, and I thought, what if I could write a story that instead of it being magic, which I had some concerns with, or the Force, which really is kind of like magic, what if I could write a story that would have all the elements except they were spiritual disciplines? And so it has the sovereign and the counselor and a yielding and a spiritual disciplines. And that was my attempt to do that. So what are these elements of story that I found in all the great stories? Well, the first was that they all seem to have this character that at the beginning is unknown and ordinary. They start out in the worst possible setting, and yet, as the reader or the viewer, we know that they have incredible potential, even though it's initially unknown to them. And it's often revealed that they're actually connected somehow to someone who's very important and who's at the center of the action, except that it's happening somewhere far away. You know, Luke is being raised by his aunt and uncle on a planet that's the farthest from the center of the galaxy. Harry Potter is an orphan being raised by a cruel family, and they have him shoved in a little closet under the stairs. Nemo's just one fish in a whole school of fish, and he has an injured fin. Why would his story matter? And then there's always a mentor or a teacher arrives to help them discover the way to fulfilling their destiny and overcoming their current situation so they can become all that they were meant to be. Luke stumbled upon Obi-Wan. Harry found Dumbledore. Poe the panda found Oogway. The young Zorro found Don Diego de la Vega. And then there's always a fellowship, a band of brothers or friends that gather around to help them on their quest. And without those friends, they could never succeed in their mission. It could literally be a fellowship of the ring. Or it might be a smuggler, a Wookiee, and a princess. It could be a bunch of gamers like in Ready Player One. Or it might just be a blue fish with short-term memory loss. Or a blue fish with short-term memory loss. Or a blue fish with short-term memory loss. Did I already say that? And then there's always some version of an ancient book, some ancient scroll that's discovered, or some prophecy. They never bother to explain where it came from. There's just a prophecy. Some long-lost letter is found, and it aids them in their journey and gives them some assurance of success when all looks hopeless. And then I love that there's always some unexplained secret power. If there's some ancient power source that can be tapped into, it might be magic words, it might be an ancient spell, it might be a puzzle in some ancient ruins or a code that has to be solved, and it gives them an edge against the enemy, something that enables them to be more than the ordinary mortal that they are, some secret power that makes them have some kind of an edge. And then to make matters even worse, there's always some personal challenge or personal flaw. The odds are overwhelmingly against them to begin with, and to make matters worse, the character is always dealing with some flaw that makes success seem all the more unlikely. However, they always overcome that flaw, and they find the strength of character that they need to overcome that internal conflict as well as the external battle, because there's always two battles, the internal and the external. And we cheer as they overcome both to succeed. You see, all the great heroes have flaws, whether it's kryptonite or just snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? In fact, if a hero isn't flawed, we don't connect with the hero. The movie will bomb at the box office if the hero is just too perfect. If the hero doesn't have flaws, it gets Rotten Tomato high ratings. Because deep down, we all know we're all flawed, and we demand that our heroes be flawed as well. And then there's always a quest. There's always a journey that must be undertaken. Even in kids' movies, the battle's never stationary. It requires movement. Victory seems impossible. There's always just a sliver of hope, a one in a million chance of success. But we know that our hero must overcome, and they will overcome. Otherwise, the story wouldn't be worth telling. We wouldn't bother investing our time or emotional energy in it otherwise. And then here's my favorite. There's always, in every great story, a great sacrifice. Someone in the story will lay down their life for the main character in order for them to succeed. Why does all this matter? Why am I sharing this with you in church? Because deep down, or maybe not that deep, we all want to be part of a great story. We want our life to matter. We don't just want to be remembered, as great as that is. We want to make a difference. When we read or watch great movies, we connect with somebody in those stories. We long to be in those stories. And it doesn't have to be the main character. We might not want to be Frodo. Sometimes we just want to be Sam, because we know that Frodo could not have done it without Sam. Sometimes it's the best friend or a team member or the co-pilot or the spouse or the companion or the captain or the mentor or the coach that we admire. The bottom line is we want to make a difference. We want our life to matter. We want the world to be better because we were in it. We don't just want to pass through. Well, I have some incredible news for you. You are part of an epic story, because you are part of God's epic story. Are you ready to be part of God's story in our next year? Because it's an epic story. It began in Genesis. It continued through the Old Testament. Then it continued through the New Testament. It's continued through the centuries. And my friends, it is still being written. And we know it's going to have an epic conclusion. 2021 is not just the next year, it is the next chapter in this epic story that God is writing. You are part of an epic story. Repeat after me, I am part of an epic story. Say it, I am part of an epic story. Say it like you mean it, I am part of an epic story. You're not just living through life, and the reason is because history, you've heard it said, is his story. And guess what? We are right smack dab in the middle of it. But you might be thinking, yeah, that sounds great, but if God were writing an epic story, I'm not sure he would cast me. I mean, it's been a rough year. You have no idea. I'm facing overwhelming challenges. I mean, I've failed. I've fallen short. I've made some poor choices. Well, what movie did you write down? What character did you jot down? Were there challenges? Were there obstacles? Was there a great enemy that was seeking the failure of the main character? Luke had to face a Death Star, not an out-of-control cotton candy machine. Frodo had to take the ring to the fires of Mordor. Can you imagine if Gandalf said, Frodo, you must take the ring to the playground in the middle of the park. Climb the highest slide and drop it down the slide. You can't make three movies out of that. It's only the formula for every action movie, from Die Hard to just about name any Dwayne Johnson movie. Our hero is always down and out. The first 10 minutes are how he failed, or how he got fired, or his family life is a mess. They have to start that way. And then suddenly, he's the only guy who can save the day. And we cheer for him because of his problems. We love an underdog. Why? Because we're underdogs. We don't cheer for people who have their life all together. We hate people who have their life all together. What we usually don't know is they just look like they have their life all together. They may be fooling us, and they may be fooling themselves. But the truth is, we're all a wreck. So we cheer on people who are a wreck because we can connect with them. What about in the Bible? Was it Daniel in the Build-A-Bear shop? Was it Shadrach Meshach in the hot sauce challenge? Was it David in the playground bully? Jonah in the goldfish? Samson at the hair salon? Esther in the beauty pageant? Noah in the trip to the zoo? Peter in the slip and slide? Paul in the bumper boats? No, it was hungry lions, a fiery furnace, a giant, a whale, a worldwide flood, walking on water, a shipwreck, a poisonous snake, life and death situations. That's why they're great stories. And if you look carefully at the stories of the Bible, you'll also notice that God delights in choosing not only the ordinary, but the overlooked and even the flawed to tell his story. A wanderer becomes the father of a nation. A shepherd boy becomes a king after the prophet goes down 11 boys and says, isn't there one more? Well, he's out in the field with the sheep. Go get him. Fishermen to become disciples. A harlot to become the great, 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 great grandmother of the Messiah. Tax collectors. A self-righteous persecutor of Jesus' followers to write the majority of the New Testament. God even chose shepherds to announce the birth of a Savior, a class of citizenry so disrespected in those days, they were not even allowed to be witnesses in the court of law. But God said, they will be my witnesses to the greatest event in human history because that's just how I work. Because you see, God's got a story to tell, and it's not just to be a great blockbuster story. It's a story of redemption. Do you know what redemption is? It's one of those big words that you only hear at church, but it's an important word. It's a word that means the action of saving or being saved from sin or error or evil. Have you sinned? Have you made errors in your life? That means it wasn't a sin, it was just something stupid you did. Have you been impacted by evil? That means you didn't even do anything wrong. It was someone else's fault. And you get bitter and wring your hands about it. Well, then it seems like your life is ripe to become a story of redemption. It's amazing to me how often secular stories mirror the biblical story of redemption. The greatest movies and the greatest books are stories of redemption. The Count of Monte Cristo is a story of redemption, from revenge to redemption. We like comedies, right? You love the little minions? I love all the memes with the minions. Gru is a criminal who becomes a hero. My favorite is Megamind, where the hero, Metro Man, lets down the city of Metropolis, and evil Megamind becomes the unlikely hero. Can I geek out on Star Wars for you for a minute? My highest read blog post in over 20 years of blogging is a blog post titled The Gospel According to Darth Vader. And I didn't ever intend for it to, I don't even know how it got indexed so high, but it's a blog post where I wrote about explaining to my son Luke why Darth Vader is actually my favorite Star Wars character. And I explained that the entire original Star Wars trilogy, despite all the sci-fi fun and space adventure, is actually a story of redemption. It's the story of a son who never gave up on pursuing the salvation of his fallen father. When everyone else had given up on him, even himself. Remember when Darth Vader says to Luke, Obi-Wan once thought as you do, it is too late for me, my son. In that final climactic scene when they're fighting and Luke finally sets down the lightsaber and says, I won't fight you. And he offers to lay down his life for his father. The Emperor incorrectly says, only now at the end do you understand. You will die like your father before you. And Vader sees the evil and the love of his son, and he looks back and forth, and he sees the great sacrifice, and he decides to make the great sacrifice himself and lays down his life for his son. And as he dies, he says, Dad, I wanted to save you. And he says, no, son, you saved me. It's a story of salvation in a space odyssey. You know, many Star Wars fans don't like the prequel films, and I love watching YouTube videos where they try and explain away all the faults of the prequel films, and there's a lot of theories, and they're all wrong. The reason those films failed is they left out all the epic elements of great stories. There's no story of redemption. It's a lot of good fighting bad, and the good pretty much wins over the bad, except for Anakin becoming Darth Vader. But there's no great sacrifice. There's no story of redemption, and so those stories fall flat. They never connect with the soul of the viewers. And that's why in the last three Star Wars movies, they returned to a story of redemption, a redemption of a Jedi master who failed a student and feels guilty and has to come to grips with his failure and receive redemption, and the redemption of that fallen student and another character who's the only one who believes in him. And I don't want to give spoilers since Pastor Caleb's still never seen any Star Wars films. But if you ever watch them, look for the great sacrifice that's made. There's actually more than one. My point, for those that I've lost talking about Star Wars, is that redemption is the point. And you'll notice in so many films that it so often happens, interestingly, that someone has to give up their lives to save the main character. Could it be that deep down we all long to be loved so much? Would someone love me so much that they would actually die for me? I love when my son, because I've taught this to him, even as a young boy, we'd be watching a kid's film, the cartoon Sinbad, and Luke would look up at me and go, "Dad, that's the great sacrifice, just like Jesus." We watched the movie about a dog named Max who does this great leap, and he dies. Luckily, the dog survives, you know. But he gave his life, and he goes, "Dad, it's the great sacrifice. A kid can get this." You know, I think it was Jesus who actually said, "Greater love has no man than this, than he would lay down his life for one's friends." And the next four words are, "You are my friends." How is it that secular writers, in writing the best stories, so often include a great sacrifice in the heart of their stories? Are they trying to share the gospel, or is it just somehow a part of them? I love, and this is so exciting to me, that God told us that man could not resist the story of redemption. You know, when the creators of the trilogy Matrix, they got angry because after the first Matrix movie, preachers were using the red blue pill, and they were using it in sermons, and they got annoyed. Like, we weren't writing a gospel movie, we're writing a cool sci-fi movie. You know, and so the second Matrix, they broke the mold, they actually tried to make it offensive, and so pastors couldn't use it in church, and the thing flopped. They could not help in the third movie returning to the epic elements of story. And in the third Matrix, there's a great sacrifice at the end that saves the world. They couldn't help it. To write a good story, they had to return to a great sacrifice. That's why God's story is hidden right smack in the middle of every story you love. Paul, in his letter to the secular Romans, not to the Jews, but to the Romans, he wrote in Romans chapter 1, "What may be known about God is plain, because God made it plain. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what's been made, so that people are without excuse." He's saying without a Bible, people know what's right and they know what's wrong. They can look around the world, they can look in their heart, they know the truth. That's why in the next chapter he goes on to say, "Indeed, when Gentiles," if you don't know what a Gentile is, it means anyone who's not a Jew. So if you're not a Jew, you're a Gentile. He says, "When Gentiles who do not have the law do by nature things required by the law, they're a law to themselves, even though they don't even have the law. They show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts. Their consciences also bear witness, and their thoughts sometimes accuse them, and other times even defend them. This will take place on the day when God judges people's secrets through Christ Jesus, as my gospel declares." It would take a while to unpack that scripture, study it later. But basically what he's saying is they don't need a Bible. It's written on their hearts. It's written in their conscience. It's written in their thoughts. And out of those thoughts and out of that conscience, they create this fiction, and the gospel leaks out because deep down they all have a guilty conscience. They all know they are so guilty they deserve to die and that only a death would take care of it. So let's circle back to the characteristics of epic stories. Why did I share those with you? They all contain an unknown and ordinary character. Guess what? That's you. You feel ordinary? Do you feel unknown? Well, guess what? Your present situation, I don't know what it is. I don't care what it is. It is not the end of the story. Your present situation is not the end of the story, because if you're still here, God's not done. And you are connected to the most powerful person in the galaxy by relation as a child of God, and he wants to connect you to the action. What about a mentor? Who is that? Do you have a mentor? Do you have a coach? Who's your Obi-Wan? Who's your Dumbledore? Who's your Oogway? You have to be looking for them. I love in The Mask of Zorro when the older Zorro finds the young Zorro, and he's in a terrible state. All right, he's drunk, he's depressed, he's angry, he does not look like a hero. But the older Zorro says to him, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. You may have a mentor, coach, person already in your life, but if you're not open, if you're not looking, you may not even see them. But if you look around, they may already be in your life. It's a matter of being open to them and asking them and saying, I'm a wreck, but if you'll help me, I will be teachable. What about a fellowship? Even Rambo needed help. The Lone Ranger had Tonto. You can't do this alone. The Avengers are a pretty amazing bunch of characters, but even they had to bind together and work together to beat Thanos. Even Superman joined the Justice League. You got the Ninja Turtles, the Teen Titans Go, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, even the kids in Stranger Things. They had to work together to overcome the Upside Down. If you feel upside down, maybe you need to join a small group. You need a band of friends. You need a fellowship. Small group signups are coming next month. Don't go at it alone. Join a small group. And I think you can figure out the ancient book. Are you reading it? Are you studying it? High Point, we have what we call PO3, Power of Three, three chapters a day. You read through the whole Bible every year. Let it permeate you and saturate you and start to change the way you think and the way you approach the world. The secret power. We don't need magic words. We get a double whammy here. We have the Holy Spirit, and we have prayer. We can connect with the God of the universe, and it gives us an edge that otherwise we would not have as mere mortals. Join us in this 21 days of prayer as we kick off the new year. And what about that challenge, that personal flaw? You know what your kryptonite is. Just be honest. Just own it. Don't deny it. God will help you overcome it. All of our greatest heroes are flawed, so welcome to the club. And what about the quest? You won't succeed if you're stationary. Movement is necessary. So embrace the journey. View 2021 as your quest. Not an escape from what's behind, but forgetting what is behind. Paul says, I press on toward what's ahead, fixing my eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of my faith. So prayerfully describe who and where you want to be a year from now and just get going. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be detours. There's going to be setbacks. But there's also going to be victories. But guess what? That sounds like a great adventure, doesn't it? And what about the great sacrifice? Well, it's already been made for you. It's Jesus. Have you accepted his sacrifice? Have you responded by returning that gift? By being dead to self, by giving your life back to him. Many people memorize Jeremiah 29:11. It's a great verse. For I know the plans, the story I have written for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Great verse. Few memorize the next two verses. Because the next verse says, you will call to me and you will pray to me and I will listen. And the next verse says, and you will seek me and you will find me. When you seek me with all your heart. See, verse 11 is conditional. We've got to be praying. We've got to be seeking him with all our heart. The story of your life, the epic story of your life, it's a co-authorship. You're writing this with God. You're in it with Him. You don't just sit back and watch. It's not a TV show. You're engaged in it. You know, in kids' ministry, we often use the term Bible characters. I kind of struggle with this term because it makes them sound fictional. Like there's some fairy tale characters that made up stories, but they were real people and they were in a real world. It was just a long time ago. But we get a glimpse into their lives by the snapshot of those Bible stories. So how did they become Bible characters? Well, they encountered God and they chose to act. They chose to obey. They chose to trust. They chose to put their faith in God. And as a result, they spent the night with lions. They walked on water. They survived a fiery furnace. They parted seas. They conquered armies with just a few men. They called down fire from heaven. They experienced incredible things. And the rest, as we say, is history. As a result of their choices, their stories ended up in the Bible. But know this, they never knew they were Bible characters. They didn't know their stories would end up in the Bible. That had nothing to do with motivating them. Daniel didn't think, I'll bet if I do what's right and I pray with my windows open, I'll get thrown in the lions. And if I pray, they'll all fall asleep and they'll be making flannel graphs and even movies of me years from now. Peter wasn't thinking, you know, if I step out of the boat and I walk on the water, kids will be trying this in swimming pools centuries from now. Esther wasn't thinking, what an inspiration to women I will be for years to come if I can just muster the strength to go before the king today. No, they had no clue that what they did would be known or remembered. They just did what was right in the moment. So you are just as much a Bible character today as they were then. We just happen to get to read what they did. So we also have the same choice. Victory or defeat. Advance or surrender. Faith or failure. In the first film of the Hobbit trilogy, based on the novel the same name by J.R.R. Tolkien, there's a hobbit named Bilbo Baggins. He's an ordinary hobbit who quite enjoys his simple life. He finds his peaceful, tranquil life interrupted one day when a dozen dwarves and a wizard arrive, inviting him to go on an adventure. He is quite uninterested. Nevertheless, the adventure is explained, and when he hears about the risk, the dangers, including possible incinerations, and is presented with a contract that even includes details for his funeral should things go badly, despite the gentle encouragement from the kind wizard Gandalf, Bilbo, he opts out. He wants nothing to do with this adventure. He goes to bed that night, hoping his life will return to normal in the morning.
When he awakes in the morning, the silence is overwhelming. The noisy, obnoxious dwarves are gone, and along with them, the kindly wizard with his invitation to adventure.
Hello?
At first, Bilbo is surprised by how neat and orderly they left the house after the chaos of the evening before. But what surprises him even more is how he feels. Where he should be feeling relief, he instead feels regret. He knows deep down he is missing out. A life without adventure is really not a life at all. Then he sees that they have left the contract, and for a moment he realizes there may still be time. It's a big decision, comfort and safety or danger with destiny. He chooses adventure. He runs after it with abandon, barely having time to pack. Caring not what others think, he
He runs after adventure, hoping he's not too late. He has a whole new perspective on life, and he wants to be what the action is.
Mr. Bilbo, where are you off to?
Stop, I'm already late.
Late for what? I'm going on an adventure.
I hope that's how you'll run into 2021. With that kind of enthusiasm, not like, oh, 2020's gone, oh, 2021. No, I want us to run into it with enthusiasm. No matter what our present situation is, look for your mentor, form your band of friends, study the ancient book like you never have before, tap into the power of prayer with renewed zeal, face your flaws, set out on this journey knowing that the Son of God has already made the great sacrifice to guarantee your success of your quest. The challenges will be many, but the rewards will also be plentiful. And unlike many stories, we already know how this one ends. Paul read the last chapter, and he told us in Philippians chapter 1, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you is going to carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. And later he wrote, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, neither is even entered into the mind of man the things that God has prepared for those who love him. So run into this new year with a sense of adventure and a sense of anticipation, because you know the author. So it can only be an epic year.